Welcome to Susitna Writers' Voice, area writers reading their work.
This is Maureen Chambrone reading We Will Not Be Rescued. The sea otter bobbing in the surf glanced my way, and his eyes widened. He raised his head for a better look, and his eyes got even wider. My heart pounded louder than the wind or crashing waves. Brian bobbed in his kayak just offshore, waiting. It was the day to go home from our three-day deer hunting trip in Kizzuyaak Bay of Kodiak Island in early September of 2001. The first day we had paddled about 10 miles to get here. The second day we paddled around the bay on flat, calm waters, looking for deer, but never seeing a buck. This last morning, we were still snuggled in our sleeping bags at 5 a.m. when we heard a disconcerting sound, a breeze. This doesn't have to be disconcerting, but when you have 10 miles to paddle with a big crossing and some tidal influence, and what if it grew? I lay there praying that it wouldn't. It did. It grew and it grew and it grew. We had told Brian's boss if he didn't show up at work at 8 a.m. the next morning to call the Coast Guard. Don't ever tell anyone this. We couldn't sit out the storm and wait until the wind came down because she would call the Coast Guard and they would come find us okay and we would be embarrassed. Better to risk death. We waited until 1 p.m. to make an official decision. This was when we would have to pack up and leave to make it back by dark. We were both relatively new to sea kayaking, weren't comfortable paddling in big seas, and only recently bought the folding kayaks we now had. This was only the second time trying them out. We surveyed the scene in our bay. Despite being in a somewhat sheltered area, the waves were still 3 feet. This wasn't that bad. We had done that on the way in. But we were uncertain as to what the waves would be like when we hit more open waters. Most likely they would grow in size as the fetch increased. It's human nature to base decisions on present conditions, and the present did not look horrible. Besides, the alternative was to stay another day and then have the Coast Guard come look for us. We started packing up camp. The sea otter slowly swam off, continuing to peer at me with incredulity. Nervously and awkwardly, I pushed my Feathercraft kayak into the surf. I had never been this close to a sea otter. On a nice day, I would have felt a surge of excitement from a close encounter with a wild animal. But today, all my emotions were taken up with anxiety and fear at the scene before me. All of my focus was on surviving the trip back to town. I waited for a lull in the surf, then quickly got in my kayak, affixed the spray deck, and paddled out to where Brian was waiting in 3-foot waves. Not too bad so far. We shot out of Kizzuyaak Bay with the wind at our backs. This should have been fun, but the thought of the 4-mile open crossing ahead of us and the increase in wave height as we headed out of the bay tempered the thrill. At the mouth of Kizzuyaak is a tall, rocky sea stack about 50 yards from shore. We had been staying close to the shoreline and passed through this short channel. The current really picked up speed through here. We hurtled through a bit out of control with wind and current in our favor. Giddy from this natural thrill ride, our morale also rose because we had a calm area in the lee of the stack to raft up, relax, and ponder our next move. Anxiety soon returned, however, at the chaotic scene ahead of us. The water had come unleashed before the west wind, rolling and surging, white spray streaming across the bay. The brilliant blue sky and sunshine did nothing to allay our fears. What we had just come through was a bit unnerving for beginning kayakers, but was not that dangerous since we had the shoreline nearby. Ahead of us was a 4-mile open crossing of Sheratine Bay. The waves would be growing from the steady 3-footers we had just come through. We had made good time with the wind at our backs. A 4-mile crossing wouldn't take long at all. With the enormous weight of trepidation slowing our muscles down, we let go of each other and paddled away from the lee. Now committed, we had to dig in and keep our kayaks pointing perpendicular to the waves, which had grown to 5 or 6 feet. The wind screamed in my ears and blew spray off the waves. It tried to tear the paddle from my hand and swing my kayak broadside. I could barely maintain control. The last natural way I want to die is by drowning. I don't like going underwater and abhor the very idea of tipping over in a kayak. I once tried to learn how to roll a whitewater kayak in a swimming pool with two people assisting me. I panicked every time I flipped over to try it. My only consolation in these 50-degree waters was that I might be too hypothermic to notice I was drowning. But the what-ifs didn't have time to plant themselves in my brain at this point. All of my attention was focused on keeping the kayak straight and preventing the what-ifs from occurring. I was disturbed by the fact that I kept surging ahead of Brian without trying to, but to remedy the situation was out of the question and life-threatening in my mind. I kept my paddle firmly in hand, trying not to let the wind catch a blade and flip me, and put all of my focus on going straight and perpendicular to the waves. Mo! The voice was small and far away. I hoped it was my imagination. Mo! It was real. It blew to me on the wind. Reluctant to lose my focus in keeping upright, I glanced back. Brian's head bobbed in the water next to his overturned kayak. He tried to get back in, but the kayak rolled over again. Until now, I had been dwelling on my own problems and vulnerability. It hadn't occurred to me that I might actually have to take control of my fear to help Brian. As scared as I'd been to have the kayak turn broadside to the waves, now I did it without thinking. In helping Brian, I was taking my mind off my own fear. I grabbed his boat, held it in an upright position, and helped him in. Being a folding kayak, his boat lacked the compartments of a hard shell, and being a klepper, it didn't have a sea sock to sit in like my feathercraft did, so his boat was full of water, mostly submerged and very unstable. The klepper brochure insists that you can paddle one full of water, maybe in a swimming pool, but not in 5 to 6 foot cresting waves. He gave it a shot and immediately tipped over. I helped him back in again. We rafted up and he held on to my boat. I tried to bilge his boat with a hand pump, but suddenly that queasy, incapacitating, seasick feeling washed over me. It was a feeling I'd dealt with before when doing something close at hand in rough waters on bigger boats, but never in a life-threatening situation. I agonized at the struggle to get myself to do what needed to be done in the time of need. But waves were crashing into his cockpit faster than I could pump them out, even if I didn't feel seasick. We abandoned that potential solution. We took deep breaths, held on to each other, and surveyed our situation. We realized we were getting closer to where we were headed without even paddling. The wind and waves were conveniently taking us where we wanted to go, the opposite shore of Sheratine Bay. We decided to stay rafted up and let them. It was just a question of whether Brian could make it without succumbing to hypothermia. Luckily, he's a burly guy. Stabilized with the two kayaks tied side by side, we now drifted broadside and relinquished control to the sea. Brian shivered from sitting in the 50-degree water. I shivered just from nerves and the cold and damp of windblown spray. There was the constant taste of salt water, and I was on the edge of nausea, insides heaving with every wave. I trembled from the fear and chill, but I felt much more secure than I had when it was just me. Periodically, I checked in with Brian, making sure he was okay. Otherwise, we shared few words, preoccupied with the scene we were immersed in. Our eyes sometimes got wide as we looked back to see a larger-than-normal wave looming behind us. The waves had grown to a steady 6 feet, with occasional ones up to 8 feet. Sometimes we surged ahead more rapidly than normal, pushed by a big cresting wave. Then we dipped down into a deep trough before rising skyward once again. It took an hour, maybe less, to reach the far shore. As we neared the shoreline, the next obstacle revealed itself. If we let the waves take us to shore, we would crash onto rocky bluffs pounded with surf. We would have to paddle ourselves about 100 yards to line up with a nice gravelly beach, but were hesitant to let go in case Brian tipped over again. There was no choice. We had to try. I tied a tow rope to Brian's kayak, and he shakily let go as I shakily paddled ahead. I towed him, and he put all his effort into just staying upright. It worked. We tumbled gracelessly onto the beach and heaved our kayaks up out of the surf. Brian shivered violently. I yanked out the tent and sleeping bags and got everything set up. He stumbled out of his wet clothes into dry ones and got into his bag. I helped him get past the shivering stage, then went out to attend to his boat. It took Brian over an hour to warm up and feel functional. Would I have survived that long sitting in 50-degree water? After warming up, he came out and we stood side by side, looking back out at the waves with renewed appreciation of the wild seas and our survival. The sun felt bright now. But the day was far from over. We still had to get around to Anton Larsen Bay, where we had parked. We continued to be driven by the idea that the Coast Guard might still get called if Brian didn't show up to work at 8 a.m. We were pretty sure we could hike up and over the ridge behind the beach and get to trails that would lead to our truck, about 3 miles as the crow flies. We stashed the kayaks and gear we didn't need in the tall grass, hoping to retrieve them another time, and started bushwhacking. This suddenly felt like the hardest part of the day, with our bodies already stressed from earlier events. The terrain was steep, uneven, and dense, with thorny salmonberry bushes and devil's club over our heads and thickets of alder, and there was the constant uncertainty of whether we were going the right way. Eventually, we burst out excitedly onto a four-wheeler trail, but our hearts soon fell again because we weren't entirely sure which direction to go on it. We picked the most likely direction, but soon the trail split and zigzagged, and we encountered huge muddy holes. I started to grumble. It was no longer about physical survival. Out on the water, there was no time or mental energy for complaining. I just dealt with the raw elements as they came my way. Following a man-made four-wheeler trail that seemed to have no rhyme or reason pushed me over the edge, and I released the stress and tears of frustration and screams of exasperation. But eventually, we stumbled out onto the road and with relief soon saw our truck. The next morning, Brian called in sick, and we hiked back over to get our kayaks. The seas were flat calm. Where yesterday our beach was churned with frothy surf and the sea was rolling and white with blowing spray and cresting waves, today it was a glassy gray mirror reflecting the sky. We peacefully paddled around back to our truck. Fishermen we met at the landing said that yesterday it was blowing 75 knots over on Shelikoff Strait and about 45 to 50 knots on this side of the island. If we had heard the weather forecast, that would have been a storm warning for us. 20 knots more than a small craft advisory. Our craft were certainly small. This has been Maureen Chambrone reading, We Will Not Be Rescued.
You've been listening to Susitna Writer's Voice, a production of Talkeetna Community Radio. You can hear these recordings anytime at ktna.org. New contributors are always welcome. You may call the station at 733-1700 for more information.